Let's go to Tauranga now, where Lisa Glass is our book reviewer. Lisa joins me now. Hi, Lisa.
Kia ora, Jesse. How are you?
Good. I always look forward to your themes, and you've gone back a couple of hundred years to begin your theme today.
Yeah, I'm looking at the original Frankenstein and two modern books, which sort of take it as their launching pad. And you're right, the original is over just over two centuries old. I think the 200th anniversary was in 2018. But although the book's so famous and it's credited with being the first science fiction novel, obviously spawning all sorts of horror books and movies, I'd never read it. And I didn't know, you know, anything really much beyond the barest cultural tropes that we're all familiar with. So what got me interested was that I'd actually been listening to a few history podcasts that coincidentally had been talking about Shelley and Byron and Ada Lovelace and Mary Shelley and the connections between them, which is a whole fascinating story in itself. And I hadn't known that Mary Shelley, the writer, was the daughter of Mary Wollstonecraft, the famous feminist who'd written The Vindication of the Rights of Women, although Mary Shelley never really knew her mother. And it was just such a rich history. So it inspired me to read the book Frankenstein, which, as you'd imagine, does have a lot more to offer than the horror movie shorthand. And the two books that are linked to it have a strong feminist thread, which ties back to Mary Wollstonecraft. So it's just a nice, tidy package today.
Yeah, some of our listeners will know a bit about that story. It was a stormy weekend, I believe, and everyone was challenged to write a horror story, and Mary Shelley came up with Frankenstein. She was not very old at the time.
No, she was only 19 when it was published, so 18, I guess, when she wrote it. And that's just one of the remarkable things about this book. It's, I guess, the reason, or one reason it's been so popular, is it has just enduring themes that think of fit our lives whenever we reach out to the book. We've got the idea of the scientist who seeks to create life without a true understanding of the consequences of his actions, and we have the monster with a need for connection and human contact that at first makes him open-hearted and vulnerable and then bitter and driven by revenge. And of course, you know, the main reason for it to be such a mainstay, it's a ripping yarn.
Yeah, and of course, stylistically, novels have changed a lot since, 1818? How hard is it to read?
It definitely took a gear change for me. The sentences are a lot more convoluted and the language is far less direct than we're used to, you know, so it might take three lines to say something you'd expect to hear in one line. But it is a little bit like Shakespeare in that if you read it out loud, or at least if you take the time to savour the rhythm and the cadence of the lines in your head, you do, well, I certainly settled into the way she constructed her sentences and her dialogue. One option, and there'll be plenty of either cheap or free options for this because obviously it's out of copyright, is to get it as an audiobook as well because it's got a real lyrical quality to the writing. And hearing it out loud really highlights that. Mary Shelley, of course, was married to the poet Percy Shelley, and among other things, she edited his work. So she really does have a good ear for the musicality of language.
And you say you know knew the basics of the story. Was the book full of surprises then on a first read?
I think it's just so different to what we're used to reading. And given that it's about a scientific leap where Dr. Frankenstein discovers the way to spark life, it's surprisingly lean on the details. So we don't know how he did it. There's some sort of vague reference to the use of galvanic stimulation, which is a precursor to electricity. But we don't know how the monster was assembled. And I guess we're so used to detailed descriptions in modern speculative fiction, you know, the science side of science fiction, that we come to expect a fully fleshed out explanation of how the situation came to pass. Whereas with Frankenstein, it's far more about the philosophy of what it means and what the consequences are. So it's a means to an end, the monster. Another surprise was the real erudition and the depth of self-expression that the monster had. He taught himself to understand language and even read and write from observing humans. And the way he was able to describe the depth of his pain was quite moving and certainly not what I'd come to expect.
So worth investing some time in then to read the original?
I think it's actually, I mean, a lot of these books you read because you think, oh, they're classics and I should, but I found it really enjoyable. Once you get used to the language and the pace, it really is gripping. Lots of gasp out loud moments, not predictable. And one of the ways it's not predictable is that it is predictable because we're so used to plot twists.
Right.
So we're set up that the monster did it. I'm like, well, clearly the monster didn't do it because it's set up. Oh, he did. Oh, you know. But yeah. She's not trying to trick us. She's trying to talk to us about what it's like to be human, and that's a much bigger task. It's a really sad story. It's horrifying, but it's beautifully told. So absolutely worth a read.
Okay. And, of course, we know that it has sparked all sorts of other tributes and stories that have been inspired by the original. Tell us about Frankenstein, published in 2019.
Yeah. So Frankenstein, F-R-A-N, Kiss, Time by Jeanette Waterson, who a lot of people will know, was longlisted in 2019 for the Booker Prize, and it's, by comparison, excuse my competitor there bringing, a very modern tale. It moves back and forward in time, so it does reference a lot that time where Mary Shelley's holidaying with her lover and her friends on Lake Geneva, and she comes up with the idea for Frankenstein. And it compares and contrasts that with our modern-day protagonist, R.Y. Shelley, who's a transgender doctor interested in the possibilities of artificial intelligence. So in Ryan Shelley's up-to-date world, Mary Shelley's 18th century companions are reborn. We've got a scientist obsessed with AI. We've got a sex bot salesman. We've got a money-driven evangelical Christian and a sneaky Vanity Fair journo looking for a scoop. And they all tie back to those original characters that Mary Shelley was with in Lake Geneva. So quite a sort of a sneaky wink for literature lovers.
Yeah, and where do we find our monster? Is it in the artificial intelligence?
It is. Artificial intelligence and human-facing robotics in general are the monster in this story. Much is made of the idea that human emotions and finer feelings are potentially largely irrelevant and effectively a barrier to progress in the minds of the book's scientist entrepreneur and the robotic salesman. There are some quite rude and quite funny scenes involving sex toy robots, and Jeanette Winston makes it pretty clear what she thinks about the people behind that industry. But that offers a light relief. The bigger point of the book actually echoes the original. You know, what does it mean to be human? What are the consequences if we're no longer the masters of our creation? In this book, that crosses over into cryonics and the idea of freezing our brains for later. And the characters, especially Ry Shelley, grapple with the question of to what extent are we our bodies? And Ry's a really interesting person to think about that because they were born a woman. Now they think of themselves as a hybrid and they pass as a man. So they're sort of asking whether an artificial body is just a progression and, you know, whether it still is able to respect the actual person that you are.
Mm. So some modern tech in there and some modern sort of issues around gender identity, but actually some pretty long-standing questions being posed here.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned the feminism, and that's, I think, quite a big part of it. You know, as we mentioned earlier, Mary Shelley's mother was a famous feminist philosopher. 200 years later, we've got a protagonist who's going to an expo where vibrating silicon women are for sale. Mary Shelley published a masterpiece at 19, but through her life, there were suspicions that the men in her life actually wrote that, and even after success, it was hard for her to get credibility in the publishing world. So this book is looking at that element, as well, of course, as the idea of science for its own sake and how we need to manage the ethical considerations.
And what's her view? Does she think that some of these technologies we're faced with are too big for us to truly understand?
Potentially, yes. Fortunately, she leavens these pretty big existential questions with humour, and she reminds us that although technology may be advanced and advancing, our foolishness, our vanity, our lust and our greed aren't. So it's not a straightforward read. It jumps back and forth and it's not linear, but it does have a lot to offer.
Okay. And is there Frankenstein in this third book you're talking about, The Strange Case of the Alchemist's Daughter?
There's Frankenstein and there's so much more. This one is a little bit of fun and beautifully done. It's by Theodora Goss. It's called The Strange Case of the Alchemist's Daughter. It came out in 2017. And it's the kind of book where you worry the premise will outweigh the substance because the premise is so good. It features the daughters or female creations of a 19th century secret society of mad scientists. And they're uncovered by Mary Jekyll, who's Dr. Jekyll's daughter, as in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. This is Theodora Goss's first novel, but she's definitely got form. She's a senior lecturer at Boston University, and her PhD was on Gothic literature. When she was researching that, she was wondering why so many of the mad scientists of fiction created and then destroyed female monsters. And so in this book, she gathers those female monsters together as the central drivers of the story. She's got Catherine Cat Moreau, who's a puma transformed into a human, and she's got Justine Frankenstein, who was brought back to life as a lover for Frankenstein's original monster.
Right, and yeah, so was she a character who was killed in that Mary Shelley novel?
That's right. She was a servant, and she was hanged because she was falsely accused of a murder that the monster had committed. In this book, Frankenstein later went back and brought her to life as a partner for the monster, because it was one of his desires. And in this book, she's found in a circus. She's a gentle giant in the circus. I've seen this book described as swashbuckling adventure crossed with literary criticism. That's pretty much spot on. The author invites us to consider the brutal treatment that created these female monsters, and she contrasts that with the mad scientist creators, who are all men. And she's showing the women working together to solve a number of brutal crimes. Workers have been being killed in London, which brings us to a treat for Sherlock Holmes fans as well, because we have the famous detective and the other inhabitants of his world hunting the killer who's murdering the women, and this group of women step in to help.
Right. And who do we blame for these murders then? Another mad scientist?
It could be another mad scientist. It's a lot of fun, but it's got meat and it's got meaning. So although it does stand alone as an adventure story, there's enough thoughtfulness to engage a broader readership. And if you're looking for a literary read about a bunch of stroppy but intrepid female monsters, this could be the book for you.
Great, great review, Lisa. So that was Theodora Goss is the author, The Strange Case of the Alchemist's Daughter. Before that, Frankenstein by Jeanette Winterson, and the original Frankenstein, if you're up for it, by Mary Shelley. Get it out from the library and give it a go. Thank you, Lisa Glass. Great to chat to you.
Thank you.